ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, it's Lisa Leong from This Working Life, helping to make your work life better with advice from the world's top experts, like psychotherapist Esther Perel.
Many conflicts are about power. Power is when I dismiss what you're bringing up. Power is when I magnify a problem.
And Professor Adam Grant.
We need to take our critics and our cheerleaders and turn them into coaches.
Free coaching! Search for This Working Life on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the ancient mystics talked about spiritual exercises, they probably didn't mean this. But in many of the world's major religions, working on the body is one way of working on the soul. And as your typical lifestyle influencer is likely to tell you, you'll never be your best self unless you regularly lock in to a fitness grind set. Hi, I'm Rowan Salmond, filling in for Meredith Lake, and this is Soul Search, the show about how we make and find meaning. For many people in this country, even watching sport can border on the spiritual. Maybe you've experienced that sense of togetherness and common purpose you find watching the Olympics or at a grand final.
Well, there's the rhythms, there's the rituals in what we do. You know, you want to think about the AFL, for instance. Think about hymn singing or chanting in some Christian churches. And then you think of what do we do before and after an AFL game? We sing the songs of the club. That could be likened to a liturgical event in going through the rituals, walking to the game, preparing for the game, you know, the cheering throughout. So I think there's a lot of similarities there.
That's Stephen Reid, who has his doctorate in sports chaplaincy. We'll hear more from him later. But first, let's bring the energy down a little, because we're getting up very, very early.
Hello, it is Rowan Salmond here, producer of Soul Search, and I am up, well, I would say bright and early, but the sun isn't up yet. I'm going to meet somebody for a run. Oh, and that's my alarm, just in case I didn't wake up on my first alarm.
I wouldn't drag myself out of bed at this hour for just anyone. I'm meeting Jasmine Alzoubi. She's an avid runner and founder of the Sydney Muslim Run Club. Hi, Jasmine. How are you?
Great, how are you?
Yeah, good.
Good to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too. How are you?
Thank you for everything. That's a decent setup.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you walk from Ashfield?
I did, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how many k's was that?
Walking and running clubs are all the rage right now. They're so popular, they've even been called the new nightclubs, providing a healthier way to socialise and sweat, trading the hangover for a runner's high.
Okay. Do you want to sit on the bench over there? Yeah, great.
Hi, I'm Jasmine Alzoubi. I'm the founder of Sydney Muslim Run Club.
Can you describe where we are?
We are currently sitting at my favourite place to run in Sydney, around the Bay Run. So just sitting on a bench in a park, beautiful Friday morning, birds chirping. Running around the Bay Run was maybe one of the first locations that I got very comfortable running. 6 or 7 years, this was my favourite place to run when I first got into running. And it is a bit of a drive from home, but I always try to take at least one day a week to make the drive down here to run.
What made you start running in the first place? Because it's really hard to start.
Yeah. Long story, but I think one that maybe a lot of people can relate to, especially young women, young teenage girls. I was studying during high school, HSC era, so year 11 and 12, gained a lot of weight and decided that as soon as I finished my HSC, I was going to get my health in check. So the day after my last HSC exam, I took myself to a boot camp and signed myself up. And I was the youngest there at 17. But embarrassingly, the most unfit there. So I also made a friend there who had a similar interest in trying to get fitter a bit more seriously. So we would start meeting up before our boot camp classes, and we would go for little jogs, 100 meters at a time at the start. Could not run more than 100 meters at a time, to be honest, without being puffed out and out of breath and needing a break. So worked our way up to 1 kilometer, 2 kilometers, 3 kilometers, and just consistently kept chipping away, just trying to get better at running after honestly realizing how horrible I was at it. Yeah.
When did you found Sydney Muslim Run Club?
Okay, so Sydney Muslim Run Club was founded February 2025, so just over a year ago now. Feels much longer than that, but yeah, it's only been just a bit over a year now, yeah.
And why did you decide to start something new?
Okay, so tracking back to around 2 years ago, I wanted to sign up for my first running event. I had taken a break from running and was trying to get back into it a bit more seriously, and decided that week after week running on your own is quite boring. So decided to join a run club. At some point in that timeline, the goal also shifted to a marathon instead of a half marathon.
Wow.
You know, delusional brain. I was like, if I can run a half, I can run a full. It's not that. It is so different, guys. Please don't do this. Would not recommend. But then I decided, okay, I want to run with people. And I came across a run club and I showed up there on my own. And I was obviously the only person there who looked like me. So a woman wearing a hijab, and everyone was lovely. The running community in Sydney especially is absolutely incredible. But I did stick out like a sore thumb. So then it just got me questioning, you know, why do I have to drive an hour to get to a run club and be the only one that looks like me? And am I sure that no one else in my community, in my area, is going to be interested in running in the first place? And I was coaching females at the time at a gym as well, and just started playing around with the idea of potentially, you know, would, if I started a little running club, would you guys join and get together and like go for a run with me? And they said yes, so I was like, you know what, even if only one person shows up, let's just do it. So I just launched it, and here we are, a year later.
And how many members does Sydney Muslim Run Club have at the moment?
Oh, I would say a lot. So yeah. I would say consistently we're looking at 60 to 70 members. So like, obviously the numbers change every week. We run 3 times a week, and obviously some runs are different to others. So some days we have female only, some days track. So different style types of runs. But then you look at our like WhatsApp channel's got over 800 members, and our Instagram has over, I think it was maybe 6,000 followers or something. Yeah. So yeah.
Who tends to go?
It's very interesting. We have a very wide range of runners that end up coming and joining, which I absolutely love, to be honest, because it just goes to show this is literally for everybody. You have on one end of the spectrum a group of people that I found don't run, like the idea, but they walk, or they want to at least try to be consistent with even just walking. So over time, slowly, from what I've seen of that demographic, they end up getting into running and starting to take their health a bit more seriously, and suddenly now a year later they're running in events and things like that. The other end of our members are people that do run and come across the club and are like, you know what, let me go try it out. They come and they enjoy it, and they find themselves breaking new goals. And you know, it's different when you're running in an environment compared to running alone, and they really reap the benefits of that and they enjoy that. And then I think a very large amount of people do come for more the social aspect. So just the ability to actually spend time with like-minded people, people similar to you, but also different, of course, because everybody is different. I feel like that social aspect of the club is very, very prominent. Yeah.
And what's distinctly Muslim about it?
Okay, so the idea for Sydney Muslim Run Club was not to be exclusive in a way where we're saying if you're not Muslim, you're not welcome. It was meant to be like an inclusion criteria. It was meant to say, you know what, you will not be the only woman there who is wearing the hijab. No one is going to look at you differently when you're wearing it, because you know what, we get it, it's part of our religion, we'll be wearing it too, or some of us will be wearing it as well. So it's that aspect of welcoming, in the sense of, you know, you won't stand out. It gives you a little bit more comfort that, you know what, these people understand me. And then the other end of it is obviously we do have certain values that we follow as Muslims. So a lot of people don't know this, but men and women who are not related or married shouldn't touch. So, you know, it's something where you don't have to explain why you can't give someone a hug every morning and things like that, or shake hands or high five after a run. We all get along, we all hang out and chit chat and it's all good. But, you know, there are certain things as well that just flow naturally. We dress a bit more modestly, I would say. We're a bit more, like, you know, accommodating in that sense. We're happy to run with other clubs, and we do very often, actually, and we've made so many friends over the past year, and it's awesome. But it's just an added layer of comfort, I guess. And then on the other side of it, we also, for example, in times of the year when we're fasting during Ramadan, we do cater runs towards the fasting month. So we aim to run before or after we eat. We're not doing track sessions, we're not doing speed work, we're just kind of doing little social runs, things like that, just like minor adjustments. It's not exclusive, it's not saying you're not welcome, but it's just to say, look, we will accommodate as best as we can to little things that come up throughout the year. Yeah.
And have you found that people from different mosques are able to meet through the run club? Is that something that otherwise wouldn't normally happen, or?
Yeah, I feel like I'm sure there are other ways to meet people and interact and, you know, interact with people of the same faith or different faiths, but, like, you know, even different sects and things like that, different mosques. But maybe it hasn't been as common, I would say. We've definitely seen it in run club, though. Like, we've definitely seen people who pray in different mosques or follow different sects within Islam come together. We break our fast together, we pray together at, like, we had a Ramadan iftar that we hosted at a park, so we all prayed together, broke our fast together, and it's actually good as well. We learn from each other, so it all kind of comes together in run club. It's a learning opportunity, but yeah, it is definitely a way to interact and meet people and, like, just learn about, like, you know, something that you might not have even questioned before, because we're just so used to socializing with our little groups that we're used to, I guess I would say. Yeah, and it's really important. I feel like we live in a very, very diverse community, and it's good, even outside of Sydney Muslim Run Club, just to interact with people of different faiths and beliefs. And even though we might do that at work, at universities, at in schools, it's kind of deeper when you're running and going through a certain level of suffering together. The bonds build a little bit deeper. You're not as guarded. You're more likely to answer questions and actually ask questions and actually learn about each other with an open mind. And it kind of, you know, when you're running and, like, all you're thinking about is surviving, you're not really thinking about, oh yeah, let me judge the person next to me for what that. You just kind of, it just really, I feel like, eases everybody up, and which has been really nice. Even, like, just outside of run club, obviously I am an ambassador for the TCS Sydney Marathon, and I've had a lot of interaction with people in from different run clubs of different faiths as well, and it's actually been really nice. Like, I did have one other runner tell me, like, he probably wouldn't have interacted with a Muslim if it wasn't for us actually meeting through running and run clubs and things like that. So it definitely paves the way. Yeah.
What do you think sports groups like run clubs have in common with religious groups, and what's different?
The things in common would be the common goal, which is, let's say in Islam, unity is a very, very big thing. We believe in the family unit, we believe in community, we believe in society, we believe in cohesion, I would say. And clubs, something like a run club, brings it together, where it's like you're not an individual fighting or surviving on your own in this world. Let's all come together, let's grow together, let's grow as a community, let's grow as a society. It's not about just bettering yourself, it's about bettering yourself and bettering the people with you and helping each other along the way. It's also kind of spiritual, right? When you're running, you spend a lot of time in your runs reflecting. You can spend a lot of time, like, just saying praises of words of worship and things like that along your run. So it's a way to remember, you know, in Islam we believe we have one God and that he's created the universe. And when you're going out for a run, I mean, you run all over the world, right? So every time you're out for a run, you're just looking around, you're like, wow, praise be to God, look at the creation, you know, that he's made. And it kind of grounds you and brings you back to spirituality in that sense. The differences, though, probably in terms of, as I was saying earlier, kind of being more on the relaxed side of things. I feel like you're tapping into spirituality in a different way when you're running, right? Like in a mosque, when we go there, we're standing together in congregation as a community, praying and reciting words from the Quran and making our prayers. It's a beautiful experience to do it. We just finished Ramadan, so obviously it's still very fresh, and it was extremely beautiful to be able to share that with everybody. The difference is, though, when we're praying in congregation, you're following the steps, right? And that's how it's supposed to be. Like, you're meant to be following the steps of prayer, and then you might step outside the mosque to socialize a little bit. So obviously, even though you can socialize in both and meet each other in both, the guards, I feel like, drop in a club situation, in a sports situation. Like, your guards have dropped, you're thinking outside the box. Yeah.
Yep. Do you want to go for a little run?
Yeah, of course. I'll never say no to a run.
Great. All right, let's go.
All right, let's do it.
On Soul Search on ABC Radio National, I'm Rowan Salmond, and I'm out for a jog with Jasmine Al-Zoubi, the founder of the Sydney Muslim Run Club.
I feel self-competition, but a bit of both, like my favourite weather for a run as well.
Oh, thanks. Put my bag down.
Feel okay?
Yeah.
Great.
I'm surviving. just a short run for you. I mean, you were talking about doing marathons.
You know what? Sometimes even 500 meters feels like a lot. I'm not even gonna lie to you. I've gotten to a point where I'm running like 1 kilometer, and I'm like, how did I run 40 of this? How?
Do you get the runner's high?
Yeah. I think that's what keeps you hooked. Uh-huh. I think at one point, I would say almost every run, or there's always a point at some in a run where you're just like, wow, I'm flying. And you just, it's hard to explain if you haven't felt it. But you know the way I describe it, it's like you're a little kid, you're running downhill, your arms are out wide, and you're just like running down a hill really, really fast. That's what runner's high feels like to me. Like, wow. You're just like completely free. And to be honest, that was one of the things with our logo. I'm not wearing the right shirt today, but the Dove logo. Mm-hmm. So it was just like the idea of like being completely free. Like, it's multiple things with that logo, but one of them is just like, you're like running like a bird, you're completely free, you're running and just flying and not caring about anything.
That's
my runner's high.
I wonder what you were saying before. Do you pray when you run?
So in Islam, you have 5 daily prayers. Mm-hmm. So that's an actual prayer where you're standing in front of God, you've made your wudu, which is when you've purified yourself, and you're standing in front of God, and it's a prescribed prayer that you have to do. Mm-hmm. When you're running, you're not doing the motion of standing in prayer in that manner, but you worship God in the sense of you're saying things like Bismillah, so in the name of God, or praise be to God, and you know, different phrases like that. It's not the movement of prayer, but it's still prayer in a way where you're spending time praising God or mentioning God, and that's all considered prayer in a way.
Mm. But different physicality.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, in Islam, obviously, we believe you can access God at any time, right? So even when you're running, if you just say, oh God, please, like, that's considered a prayer, basically. Mm. Yeah, it's something nice. It keeps you grounded. Every time you hear the birds chirp, it's.
Does Islam have anything in particular to say about running?
I don't know if it says anything in particular about running, but what I do know that it says about our bodies, and we believe that our bodies are entrusted to us by God, right? So we believe that God has put our souls in these physical bodies, and these bodies one day will die, will be buried, and, you know, there will be nothing. But in the meantime, while you're on this earth, you are obligated to look after your body. That's on a spiritual level, on a mental health level, but also definitely on a physical level. So, you know, let's say something that you get asked common from a lot of Muslims during Ramadan is, hey, we want to spend more time in the mosque physically worshipping God or reading Quran, which is 100% all valid. But we always encourage people as well to still come to Run Club and still join us for a run, because moving your body for those 30 minutes is still part of you staying committed to your obligation to looking after your body. Physical health is actually really important in Islam. You know, when it comes to eating, we do have hadiths that will tell you, you shouldn't be eating until you're full. You know, it's not about being greedy with your food. We believe that you should fill up a third of your stomach with food, a third of your stomach with water, and a third of your stomach with air. So even in Ramadan, there might be the stigma or the notion or the stereotype that, oh, at sunset, you're going to eat everything on that table and absolutely annihilate yourself with food. No. You're meant to take it back, look after your health in that manner as well. Watch what you're eating, watch how you're moving, and running is definitely a way to make sure that you're actually fulfilling that obligation, looking after your body and your health and physically, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
In a lot of religious traditions, there's the idea that discipline of the body is a big part of discipline of the spirit, or even like discipline of desire. Is that something that resonates with you, or do you think about that differently?
Honestly, I would say no, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's many ways to look at discipline as well, not discrediting any of it, but I would definitely agree. So, like, for me, waking up at 5 a.m. to go for a run at 6 a.m., you have to discipline your mind to say, don't snooze the alarm. And you have to then discipline yourself and do whatever is required to make sure you get up and you fulfill that, the commitment that you've made to yourself the night before when you were delusional, right? So it's definitely all linked together, you know, and a way that I actually integrate it a lot is, well, our first prayer that we are obligated to do in the morning is usually coinciding with my first run or training session of the day anyway. So like, I'm going to be up at 5 a.m. for prayer. So I'm going to be up, I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to go for my run. And now I've linked them together and I've committed on both ends that I'm not going to miss this obligation or that obligation. I'm going to discipline myself to actually fulfill both.
Mm.
And then it just carries on through everything, right? Like, once you've disciplined yourself to go for a run and it's your goal to eat healthier, it's very rare that you're then going to go to a cafe and buy a pastry if it's your goal. Don't get me wrong, we do it very often, but it's not our goal. Our goal is not to eat healthy sometimes. Our goal is sometimes to socialize and enjoy a bit of pastries. But when I'm in a state where, you know, my goal is actually to actually be eating healthy and creating my and maintaining my healthy habits and a healthy lifestyle, I've like woken up on time, I've prayed, I've gone for my run, you set yourself up, right? So, and over time, I feel like the desire for anything that is not productive to your goals kind of disappears, right? Because you suddenly feel like, well, I feel a lot better mentally, I feel a lot better physically, I look better physically, everyone around me is like, you know, noticing a difference in me. I'd say there's a big correlation, yeah, for sure.
You mentioned that when you first went to a run club and because you wear hijab, that you stood out. And like something that strikes me about, you know, like the fitness sort of culture is this sort of vanity and like, you know, people showing off their bodies and it's not always very, you know, approachable.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, personally or like religiously, how did you process that when you first started running, and like how do you think about that now?
So for me, it was a bit tricky. I'll say for me personally, it was challenging to navigate. In Islam, we value modesty, right? So we value dressing modestly and we value behavior and acting with dignity, right? So we don't really value dressing in tight clothing, and obviously as a woman who wears a hijab, I'm not going to be walking around with a crop top, right? So there's already the sense of you're wearing a hijab on your head, which is making you stand out, and then in summer in 40 degree heat, you're running with an oversized long sleeve t-shirt and loose trousers, and then there's a level of that can be off-putting to people. You can fall down, unfortunately, the wrong path in terms of trying to dress in a way that you assume will make others accept you easier, right? And it was a struggle that I had internally of like, okay, I'm going to be rocking up in a men's large t-shirt that like drowns me, right? But to an extent, once you break that first barrier in your mind about everyone is staring at me, everyone's looking at me, everyone's judging me. Just taking a step back, getting out of your own head, realizing the world doesn't revolve around you and no one actually cares, right? Like, sometimes telling yourself that can work. And it is hard. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's not hard. It's very difficult. It's simple, but so difficult to do. Sometimes you get invited to events and, you know, they give you a pair of shorts and you just stare at them like, ooh, I can't wear these, you know? But slowly, slowly, I'm hoping that by one person taking that step and kind of breaking that breaking that barrier, more and more people will feel more comfortable to also take that brave first step. And then once you do, you start to truthfully realize that, vanity stuff aside, most people are actually extremely lovely. I've had so many people learn the words assalamu alaikum now, right? And that's how they greet us, and that's how they greet a lot of people at Run Club, and it's beautiful. So I feel like as well, in the past year or two, we've also seen a lot more people who don't fit the stereotype of what a runner needs to look like. And sometimes it's okay to take a step back, and sometimes you might get a bit insecure about it, but I feel like over time that's slowly changing. There's a certain bit of you that feels satisfied when you know that you stuck to your values, when you know that you stuck to your, as I said, Islam values modesty. And I feel much more satisfied knowing that I have dressed as modestly as I could to this point, and I will continue to improve, and that I will set that example for any girls who might look at me and say, oh, you know what? She's dressed this way, there's nothing wrong with it, I can dress this way too, because maybe that was something I lacked when I was younger and was struggling with that journey.
What do you think sports clubs, just sort of in general, bring to our communities? What are the positive things that happen in that relationship and dynamic where everyone's doing sport together?
You know what, because I was never somebody who... I mean, my parents always kept us in like swimming and tennis, and they put us in sports, but I was never part of a sports club. So my first time being part of a club is this Run Club. And I can like very confidently say, when I used to run alone versus now, I've noticed so many changes within myself.
Really?
Right? Just like within myself, I'm a lot more, I'm naturally an introvert. But now I feel a lot more social. I'm a lot more extroverted. I enjoy spending time with people. I enjoy training with people. I enjoy, you know, socializing. And I think sports club like bring a level of cohesion together that maybe the community is lacking in this day and age, whether that's on a, in just from the Muslim community or the general community around the world. Like I said, like after COVID, I feel like there's a lot of work from home, stay by yourself, jump on social media and just be in your room. And, you know, the economy's horrible, so who's spending money every day eating at a fancy restaurant? Like, a lot of things that we used to be able to do for enjoyment, to stay in contact with each other, have kind of disappeared over time. But a sports club kind of brings back the unity within communities. And once you're seeing someone else in that club push themselves to a goal, you're like, whoa, I wonder if I can do that, because you and I started at the same time and you're doing that, so maybe I can do that. And suddenly you're unlocking parts of yourself that you wouldn't have even known existed. And suddenly, like I said, some people just come join Sydney Muslim Run Club just to go for a walk on a Saturday morning, and now they're signing up for a triathlon. And it's like, who would have thought about it, right? Like, how would you have even thought about it? But you know what? There's five people in the club doing it, and I think I can actually do it with them. And suddenly you're all working together towards goals that you didn't even know you could have. And then on the other end of it, it brings people together. Like, we do have a lot of people in our club who have moved from other countries, and they've come to Sydney and they don't have many friends, or they don't know what community to join. And, you know, like I said, sometimes going to a mosque is awesome, but what are the chances that you're going to find someone so like-minded in the sense of their interest in this sport specifically? So now it's brought people together. Now you've made friends, and we see it very often. Like, I'm very grateful and I absolutely love seeing it. Like, I'm so happy to see it that, yeah, you met at Run Club, but now you're best friends, like generally. Not only that, we've also had some people who are new to Islam or thinking about converting to Islam, who then come, they see a Muslim Run Club, they're like, oh, okay, let me go see. And, you know, they'll come, and it's been consistently with them attending runs and meeting people and interacting. And now they also get a chance to ask questions in a more relaxed environment. You know, you're not speaking to a sheikh directly with a list of questions, but you're just curious, right? Like, we're just curious. And I'm curious about different sects in Islam. And, you know, there's no harm in learning. Mm. And you get to learn in a very relaxed and very chill environment without needing to, like, specifically maybe make a booking to go speak to a scholar, right? Mm. Like, it's very different, I feel, yeah. Mm.
And what's next for Sydney Muslim Run Club? You're about a year in. What are your hopes for the future?
I think this year especially, I really want to help foster an environment where people are actually enjoying running. I love that we have a community now that has started. A lot of us have started from nothing, from like 1 or 2 Ks at a time. Last year we had, I want to say, 35 people from Sydney run the TCS Sydney Marathon. And for the majority, like over 30 of them, it's their first marathon ever, right? And now there's like an addiction to running, and they've found this obsession to running, obviously. And now they've fallen down that rabbit hole of, you know, being obsessed with running. And it's really lovely to see it. And I just want to be able to continue to send the message that running is for everybody, but then also tell people, like, you don't need to run a marathon. You don't even need to ever sign up to a race or an event or anything like that. You just need to, I just want you to be able to say, you know what? I feel like I haven't had the best day ever. I want to go for even just a 1 kilometer run, and it's going to change my whole outlook today. That's what I want. I want people to feel like running is for them, that running is 100% an inclusive sport, because it is. Like, And I also want people to do it in a healthy way. I want to make sure that we're focusing this year on getting runners to start lines in a very, very healthy way. I don't want to see runners getting injured. There's a very big, unfortunate trend right now happening where we're seeing a lot of women in running, especially with stress fractures and injuries, and not looking after themselves and not fueling themselves correctly. And I just want to, especially with women, just push the healthy start line and the healthy finish line, rather than just ticking off a box of marathons and whatever distances people want to achieve. And in terms of Sydney Muslim Run Club, I just really want it to be able to serve the community, right? Like, that was the whole point, just to bring people together. A lot of people unlocked a passion for running that they didn't know they had. I was definitely one of those people back when I started running. And I just want people to be able to have access. If running is something they want to do, here is access. Here is a club that you can join that you know you will not be the only one that stands out. Here is a club that is safe, that is welcoming, that is your family. And I just want them to be able to have access to that club for whatever goal, to help them achieve whatever goals they want to achieve.
Well, thank you so much for taking me out on a run.
It was my pleasure. I love it. This is what I'm made to do.
Thanks for being on Soul Search.
No, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
That's Jasmine Al-Zoubi, founder of the Sydney Muslim Run Club. And if you want to learn more, we'll have links to the club's pages in the show notes for this episode on the Soul Search website. On Soul Search, you're with Rowan Salmond here on ABC Radio National, filling in for Meredith Lake. We're thinking today about the cultivation of the body as part of the cultivation of the soul. How much does exercise feature in your spiritual practice? We'd love to hear from you about that. Don't forget, you can always email the Soul Search team at soul.search@abc.net.au. So, how spiritual is sport? And as Australia becomes more secular, could running groups or football clubs be starting to fill the social and spiritual aspects we might have previously gotten from more traditional religion? Dr. Stephen Reed is a long-distance runner and has a PhD in Christianity and sports chaplaincy. Meredith Lake caught up with him to find out the connection between Australian sports culture and Australian spirituality.
As a social researcher, I'm sure you've come across, well, at least these two stories, right, about Australia. One, that we're a more or less secular society, and the other, that we're a mad keen sporting nation. And I want to start with that sports story. Have you found in your experience that people here are especially keen on sports, whether watching or playing?
Yeah, very, very much so. I think certainly some of the research I've done, but also being involved with sport for many, many years in different capacities, I think that would be true to say. Australians are pretty mad with their sport. Of course, every country will probably say that when it comes times to the Olympics or international events. But I think there's something quite unique and different about the importance of sport in Australian lives. I think we only have to think of the fact that we have two public holidays, at least here in Melbourne, for sporting activities, the Melbourne Cup and the day before the AFL Grand Final. So yes, I think that would be a correct assumption to say we're a bit of a mad sporting nation.
Especially you Victorians, it's true. And I was reading, like, in terms of professional sport, we support a lot of teams, like a lot of professional teams for our size of population. And I guess, yeah, at the grassroots level, and this sounds like it's been your experience, a lot of people do opt in and play something. What did you do?
I did a number of different sports. I did, you know, little athletics as a kid, and then I played a bit of cricket and played a bit of soccer as well, as indoor soccer as well, occasional basketball games here and some one or two games of AFL as well. But it wasn't until my late teens that I started running, and I found that to be the area that I really enjoyed, that I got a lot out of it, and have been distance running ever since, yeah.
Wow, that's a while now then, I'd imagine. What?
That's
what? What?
40 years.
Wow, 40 years. Okay, what is it about long distance running that's so compelling to you?
There is that competitive aspect to it, whether I'm competing against others in a race or actually against myself for a time. But I'll put that aside, because there is obviously as well, it's a physical activity, as we know, but it can be very much a spiritual activity as well. So for me, as a Christian, as one who tries to follow the teachings of Jesus, running can be a time of reflection, of prayer, of engaging with God in a way that I struggle to do in other ways. So if you want me to try and explain that, I suppose I feel privileged living in an area of Melbourne that's close to a creek. It has walking paths and bicycle paths that lead all over the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. I don't listen to music when I run. I don't usually take my phone with me. I just enjoy the environment and the creation, and just feeling that sense of contentment with life just for that couple of hours, you know, despite all the chaos of the world.
Mm.
I don't want to be too romantic about it, because obviously the reality is that sometimes, perhaps very often with most things in life, it can be a hard slog. But I think as a whole, I still do it. And you could say that, I suppose, in itself is similar to a faith journey, in that bit of pain now in the short term, maybe hope for a better life to come perhaps as well.
It's interesting that you find metaphors for the life of faith in your experience of running, Stephen. I was catching up on the footy results and I saw a headline describing one team's upset win as an Easter miracle. And then I read another match report about a game so exciting it came down to a single point scored in the dying seconds. And that game was reported as the Easter resurrection that the whole season needed. And like, it was Easter. Religious language is easy to reach for at that time of year, but I don't think it's unique to use religious language or metaphors in the realm of sport, or vice versa. Do you think there's something religious, not just about your own experience of running perhaps, but about sport and its cultural place in Australia today?
Certainly, sport can be a spiritual pursuit. I know some scholars, certainly through what I've read, have sought to define sport theologically. You know, they might reason that sport links with the most basic of human activities, and that allows us to express our full humanity. And so it can connect us with a divine, however we see the divine. Others have suggested that sport can be transformational, or that it can be liturgical, or even a worshipful act. I like to use the words of that late great Christian missionary and Olympic athlete, Eric Liddell, the movie
From
Chariots of Fire. That's
yes.
Correct, yeah. And there's a scene in that he says to his sister, "God made me fast. When I run, I feel God's pleasure." Now, whether he actually said that or not, I don't know. It's probably a poetic license, but I think the physical and the spiritual can't be separated.
And interesting that for some individual athletes, like, I mean, he's an interesting example, that was really potent, that connection. But that communal idea that it can be liturgical, I'm interested in sport as liturgy. I mean, I associate liturgy with what happens in a service, a religious service. So can you just unpack what it would mean to think about sport as liturgical?
Yeah, a lot of what we do can be also seen as liturgical. There's the rhythms, there's the rituals in what we do. You know, you want to think about the AFL, for instance. I'll use that example because I'm here in Victoria and that's probably the main sport here in Victoria. But if you think
here
of the
rituals...
Here in
Alice Springs too.
Yeah, yes, for a lot of the southern states as well. But I sort of think of that and also think of, you know, my involvement with a church community. Think about hymn singing or chanting in some Christian churches, and then you think of, say, what do we do before and after an AFL game? We sing the songs of the club. So in a sense, there's sort of that could be likened to a liturgical event in going through the rituals, walking to the game, preparing for the game, you know, the cheering throughout. And that's true to say in a lot of sporting endeavours and events as well, I think. And some would even say that there are similarities between the sacred, where they meet, where they play the games. Think of the great cathedrals of the world. And then think of supposedly hallowed turf, the Melbourne Cricket Ground. The ideas that it's a liturgical event played out on sacred ground as well. So I think there's a lot of similarities there.
And some people consider those sporting grounds sacred enough to scatter, you know, the ashes of their loved ones there.
Yeah, that says something itself, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
Itself. Yeah, very much
they're,
so.
They're places of considerable meaning making. You've done a lot of research on a very formal and a kind of clear area where sport and religion overlap in contemporary Australia, that being sports chaplaincy, Stephen. I'd like to hear more about this because when I think of chaplains, I have to admit, I think of maybe a hospital, you know, part of the defence forces, a prison. So what is a sports chaplain and what role do they have?
Well, any chaplain is a person that probably seen by the majority of people as someone that goes in and cares for people in the situation they're in. And that's the same in the sporting area as well. So sports chaplaincy, chaplains generally are volunteers that they go into a club and, you know, be a presence there amongst people, build relationships and care for the people. A lot of the research that I undertook, that was first and foremost in how they perceived their role and their function within a sporting club. They were there for the people as a witness to Jesus. In fact, a lot of chaplains were very made sure that they were not there to Bible bash. They weren't there to, you know, as it might be said, to try and convince people of one faith over another or anything like that. They were there because they felt called to serve people, to care for people in a way that they felt, you know, modelled on Jesus.
Are there sports chaplains from other faiths? I know that in the military, for example, there are. Is this a Christian phenomenon, as far as you're aware, in Australia at the moment?
Yeah, it certainly has been. So sports chaplaincy as an organisation, so Sports Chaplaincy Australia has been around for about 40 years. And it's a Christian organisation, so and the research that I did for my doctoral studies was about Christian chaplains, so but I didn't find any examples of chaplains from other faiths in the sporting environment. Not to say they're not there, it's just I didn't find any, and I'd be very interested to hear from any that are out there.
Sounds like there's lots of room for more research in this area, Stephen, but what did you learn about why clubs wanted a sports chaplain? Because presumably they have to agree to have a volunteer chaplain connected with them. What was that side of the equation like?
It's interesting because that was one of the questions that intrigued me at the start, I suppose. On the one hand, I saw the research that I was undertaking, and certainly the sociological trends showed declines in many of religion's type activities. So church attendance was declining, decline in other faith practices. Certainly there was negative attitudes towards religion. And yet on the other hand, I'd heard about chaplaincy to sport, which was struggling to actually get volunteers to fulfill the need within the club. So, of course, that's quite intriguing and something I considered worth exploring. And so the demand for Christian chaplains actually shows currently, I think, that people want care, they want community, but they don't always necessarily want it connected with restrictive doctrines or the out-of-date institutional structures that they perhaps don't have confidence in anyway. So, yeah, they want to have someone in their midst that can care for them, that can build rapport with their players, their families of the club. That's sort of certainly what I found in the research.
Hmm. Do you think sporting clubs are perhaps, at least sometimes, taking on some of the social functions that maybe the local religious community once filled? I'm asking because often clubs now will have mental health workshops, not just training nights. Clubs do all kinds of health awareness that's much larger than what's required for the immediate playing of the game. Are they taking on some of the social and even religious functions maybe of the old school church, or is that going too far?
I certainly do think that sporting community, in fact, probably a lot of community groups, are, people join them for a particular purpose. They join for a shared cause or shared values, whether it's, playing a particular game or going for a bushwalk weekly, knitting, sewing, whatever it might be. So they're there for an activity, but that's not the only reason they're there. They're there for community, which in turn provides support. And I think a lot of sporting clubs, perhaps some of the issues in society have been thrust onto them, and this is where the chaplain steps in. And I think that's what the beauty of the chaplaincy role is, it can come in and step in and address some of the issues that a lot of the people in the clubs are not really equipped to deal with.
It's fascinating to me. Is this an example of people don't want to go to church, but if the right element or the acceptable element of the church was prepared to come to them, then maybe, okay.
Yeah, that's great. The chaplain provides a connection between a local church. They saw their role as a chaplain connected with the ministry of the church, but they were the link to the sporting club. And I think the expectation is for many churches, I won't say all, but certainly many Christian churches, I'm not sure whether it's true of other faith groups, is that we expect people to come into our churches. Whereas I think the model that Jesus lived, we go out. Doesn't mean that church isn't important, but I think if we can step out and link to community groups, then we're fulfilling, what I think we're called to do as Christians as well.
On ABC Radio National, you're listening to Soul Search. I'm Meredith Lake, and I'm talking with Dr. Stephen Reed. He has a PhD that looks at sports chaplaincy in contemporary Australia. He works as a social researcher with the Australian Catholics Bishops Conference. He's also pretty keen on sports and especially running himself. Guess I want to come back to that connection that we spoke about earlier between, the physical body and what you might call the spirit or the soul. I mean, I've been thinking about, way back in ancient Greek society around, the early ancient Olympics and those kind of things. This idea that, the discipline or exercise of the body went hand in hand with, the cultivation of the mind, the disciplining of the soul. It seems to me that that is quite a long-standing thread in the history of, what you might call sport and competitive sport. And I'm aware that this kind of crops up in some surprising ways, that we see this even in the texts that make up the Christian Bible, that there are kind of sporting metaphors for the spiritual life, even in the texts of the New Testament. And I wonder if you could just tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I did sort of was thinking about earlier before I said, in terms of the distance running, sometimes it's a hard slog and there's a bit of pain for the short term, but in the hope of something better to come. And I think, St. Paul in his writing to the Philippians noted that we strive towards a better life. We forego the pain that we're going through because we hope for something better in the future. There's a great distance running analogy. If you've ever run marathons or any distance event, you think of that. It's the short-term pain for the long-term gain. So, you know, a lot of the books of the Bible that we have, certainly in the New Testament, written in a context, communities where I would imagine that there was sporting events as well. And certainly I think Paul, as one example, drew on some of those, you know, ideas to say what he wanted to say.
How do you think the time you've spent over those 40 years doing so much long-distance running has informed your spirituality? I mean, just because I think whatever we give our attention and time to, right, is going to help shape us. And I wonder what you think that's added or given to your faith.
Yeah, gee, that could be a very deep question. And I'll try and, for me, it's, I suppose, a lot of the benefit of running, that is being alone by myself, not always, but quite often, is that it actually allows me some time to connect with God. And that would be the same for a lot of athletes, I think, who, you know, have a faith commitment. And it's just for me, physically, mentally and emotionally, running is what I enjoy. You know, running has enhanced my faith. And part of that is that it allows me time to think, but also, you know, it just allows me the freedom to be able to, you know, appreciate that health. I'm fortunate I have good health, to be able to appreciate the surroundings that I run around, the trails and the paths and the bitumen that I run on, and the people that you very often meet out on your trails as well. So I think there's various benefits.
To return to kind of the more obviously communal sports, the team sports that we were talking about earlier, Stephen, having kind of thought about the role of chaplains in some sporting clubs today, I wonder what you would like to see the captain of a sporting team kind of taking on or understanding, and what would your own message be to people who I think in many communities do hold a lot of responsibility for the well-being of their teammates and their club? Is there something you, I guess, would like to see flourish in the way sporting clubs and their leaders go about the work that they do?
Certainly the evidence in the research that I've undertaken would show that there's some serious benefits from having a chaplain in your club. And it's not necessarily just the practical things that come with it. But I would say that a lot of people I talk to as part of my studies were a little bit hesitant to start off with about the chaplain coming into their club, their environment. Some of it's to do with the terminology of chaplain. It's very, very much has Christian connotations to it as well. But I think what a lot of particularly the sort of administrators within the clubs who had the say over that the appointments and so forth were saying, it's the best thing we ever did to be able to address some of the concerns they had, to be able to build a culture which was focused on care of individuals within the club, whether that's the players, the athletes, the family members, or the administrators and coaches themselves, and very often the fans as well that turned up every week to watch the games. You know, I think a lot of those would probably provide testament to the fact that, hey, you know, the chaplain in our club has certainly been able to point to something beyond the club themselves. It's not about the winning, but it's about the individuals that are involved. And for some people, there's a faith element to that, but for many, there isn't. But I think the chaplain is able to journey with the individuals within the club in a really positive way.
Dr. Stephen Reed is an avid runner and senior research officer with the Australian Catholic Bishops Conference National Centre for Pastoral Research. His PhD is in Christianity and sports chaplaincy. Earlier, we went for a run with Jasmine Alzoubi, founder of the Sydney Muslim Run Club. If you missed it, you can always listen back to this episode and all of our other ones too on ABC Listen. This episode was made on Gadigal and Arunda land by Meredith Lake, Hong Jiang, and me, Rowan Salmon. And we're looking forward to your company next time for Soul Search on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.